all the weddings that I'm about to host is coming up. Yeah.
Next time you come on my show, you wear a t-shirt.
Oh,
you
man.
You know the rules up here.
Come on now.
We treat it like
plus DR 25,
Retro. Plus 25. We treat it like DR. Next time you come on my show, you wear a t-shirt, okay? Okay? Don't become showing your arms.
I've been half a mile, half a mile.
Look, a man child, like this here.
Hey, kids. This is DJ Sirius Black on CKUT 90.3. We're in hour two. Keep it locked and loaded. If you are sweaty, it is time to get a drink. If you
see
to get up or you're just okay, it's going to get live really fast.
T 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication channel.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Good morning and welcome. Jazzamuck time. Kenny Tabell and his trio. A piece entitled Arrested Confusion from the 2020 release on Teoforms Recordings. Now Then, the name of the release. And so nice to hear, because the opportunities aren't there that frequently. And so nice to hear Kenny Tabell at the drums, working with him, Michael Bizio at the bass, and Adam Siegel at alto saxophone. Again, from Now Then, Kenny Tabell and his trio. That starts this morning's edition of Jazz Amok. Good morning. Welcome. Hope you can stick around. Couple hours of creative jazz to tickle your ears and brain and other things with. Perhaps. We'll see how it goes. I do hope you can stick around. We're here as usual on a Friday morning, CKUT 90.3 FM, www.ckut.ca, anytime. We're going to start the first set off with a duo pairing the saxophonist Devin Raja Waldman and the drummer Hamid Drake. They have a new release out. We're taking we've heard from it before. We're going to start this set off with a piece entitled Ponder. It's a fairly new release out on the Astral Spirits recording label. Mediumistic Methodology is the name of the release. Again, Waldman at saxophone, Drake at the drums, and this is a piece entitled, once again, Ponder, all right here on Jazz Amok.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Listeners, my name is Alice Wu. Towards the end of May, I conducted a series of interviews with several independent visual artists and musicians in Montreal. They were all participating in an event called MTL Uncovered, which took place at Théâtre Paradox on May 29th. While that event has come and gone, these interviews remain timely. They reveal the diversity of the city's art landscape and the joys and struggles of being an independent creator. So without further ado, here's my interview with the artist Sati. All right, hello. So today we are here with Sadie Bien-Aimé, who also goes by the artist name Art by Sati.
Yes, yes. Hello. Hi.
Hi. So Sadie describes herself as a self-taught visual artist born and raised in Montreal. Where in Montreal did you grow up and where are you living now?
Well, where I'm living is essentially where I grew up. And I moved a little bit back and forth throughout Montreal, but I grew up in DDO and I'm still in DDO today. So I went to Vaudreuil and then I kind of stayed downtown a little bit, but mostly I'm back there. It's comfortable, the suburbs.
So you go by the name Art by Sati.
Yes.
So off air, we talked about this, but do you want to explain to listeners where this artist name comes from?
Yeah, essentially when I was younger in high school, one of my friends asked a question because my background is Haitian. My family is Haitian. And my grandmother has a thick Creole accent, essentially. So he's also Haitian, my friend. And he asked me, hey, how does your grandmother say your name? Because Sadie is not really a Haitian name. And he kind of was teasing me. And he's like, does he call you Sati? Sati? And since then, he kind of just went with that one. And a few people started calling me Sati. And then I made that my handle. And I was like, screw it. Let me just call myself Art by Sati.
Was that like a painstaking decision process to figure out your artist name?
Honestly, no. The way that I do things typically is that whatever sticks when I first think of something, if it feels right, I just go with it. And since I've had the handle Sati for so long, I was like, of course I'm going to call myself Art by Sati.
That's a great story. So one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to Sadie at this point in time is that her work is going to be showcased at an event at the time of recording on the upcoming Sunday. So it's going to be Sunday, May 29th. The event is called MTL Uncovered. It's a huge event featuring a lot of independent musicians and visual artists taking place at Théâtre Paradox. Wonderful stuff.
Yup, I'm excited.
To jump back a little bit before we get to more about the event, how did you become interested in art and what kind of is your artistic training?
Yeah, I have absolutely no training.
Right.
And I feel like with a lot of stuff that I do, I kind of just dive in and hope for the best. And it's no different with this. I was in biochemistry at Concordia for my adult life, essentially my university education. When I was nearing graduation, I realized that I took so many science courses and I had throughout those years no artistic outlet and I was craving that. So essentially when the pandemic came, it gave me so much time to dive into art. And so the first thing that I tried with my best friend, we were just like, let me just start painting. And we tried it one night and I really, really loved it. And I just kept going and people started buying my stuff. And here I am today.
And that is about 2 years later.
Yes, 2 years. Yeah.
So, okay. So when you said you started, you just bought some paint.
Yeah.
Had some paper lying around.
I went to Dollarama. I bought the cheapest paintbrushes and the cheapest canvas I could find. And I was like, let me just scribble some. Can I curse?
Sure, go ahead.
I was like, let me scribble some shit. And then my best friend that was there painting with me, she's like, yo, you're not bad. So I just kept going. And then I started posting. And then people started buying. And I just loved it. And I still love it. So I just kept going.
What was the first thing you painted that night?
It was an abstract painting. It was honestly just like color blobs.
Okay.
It's hard to describe. It was like abstract. And my style has changed so many times since when I started at the beginning, obviously. So at the beginning, it was more abstract, and now I'm doing more portrait-style art, pop art, I would say.
So you mostly picked up painting not from school, just from this moment in time.
Yeah.
During the pandemic.
Exactly, yeah.
But you said you were good at art in school, and you were always scribbling around.
Yeah, like in elementary school or in high school when we had art classes, I was always the ones that the teachers were like, oh, you're pretty good. Da, da, da. So they would like compare me to other class members, and I just enjoyed it, and it was nice. But I never took it seriously and I never it wasn't a daily or even a weekly or monthly thing. It's just, I just did it when I felt like it. And when I picked up painting, it wasn't great in the beginning, but it came easier to me than other stuff. So it was good.
So you never imagined being where you are today, where you're selling prints and stickers of your paintings?
Hell no. Absolutely not. I thought I would be pre-pandemic, pre that whole situation that happened in 2020 and is still going on. I thought I would be continuing my education, potentially pharmacy. And yeah, so I'm like, I'm taking this opportunity to dive into something else and see where it goes. And so far, so good, I would say.
So are you taking this time right now to dedicate yourself to your art full
time? Oh, yeah. Yeah, full time. That's the plan. I'm trying to push this all the way up if possible for as long as I can.
Because you also have professionalized your practice and are able to make money off of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what do you mean by professionalize?
Well, I think professionalize is usually you make it a profession or you can support yourself with
it. Okay, okay. I thought you it sounded like a, I don't want to say hierarchy thing, but I was like, okay, professional sounds too professional for what I do. But yeah, no, in that case, yeah, I would say that I professionalized my painting.
That's wonderful. So you started painting because you graduated, you said May 2020.
Yes.
And then around that time, you started painting.
Yeah.
And then when did you start selling your art?
It was not long after. I would say late summer of that year. So late summer of 2020 is when someone, like a couple friends were like, hey, can you recreate this for me? I kind of want to hang it. So I would say a little bit later that same year.
So your first buyers were friends.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
And then when did it start to take on more of its own life, your business?
Well, through friends, they kind of encouraged me to change my Instagram page to a business page and start posting my work and just see where it goes. And I was like, you know what? This is not a bad idea because I had a few people, whether it be friends or friends of friends, ask for paintings. So I was like, what if I just like open this to the like the public or people that I don't know?
Right.
And yeah, and it just picked up through word of mouth, I would say. And yeah, strangers started coming to me with like bigger and bigger commissions. And to me, I was like, yeah, that's great. That's practice. And yeah, and improved. Thank right. God, because my paintings in 2020 compared to now, oh Lord, it's not cute.
Are those still on your Instagram?
Actually, yes. A couple of them are still on my Instagram. If you scroll all the way down, a couple of them, yeah.
I will be checking those out during the break.
Oh, actually, I just deleted. I'm sorry. I just realized I just deleted it just now. You can't look. I'm just kidding.
Never mind then. Foiled. Plans are foiled. That's wonderful. So you just saw an opportunity and then took the plunge.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you dedicate yourself to art full-time right away? Or you were just...
Kind of.
Because you just graduated and you were in a transitional period.
Yeah, I was at a point where I was like, what else am I going to do, honestly? Because everything was shut down. All that we could barely even see friends past a certain time when curfew was set in and all that stuff. So I was like, what else am I going to do aside from paint and actually make money on a side if possible? So yeah, I guess I kind of took it full time because it's what I had, you know, it's all I had pretty much.
Right. Because there are so many people who want to be artists, who want to be able to support themselves doing that and dedicate themselves to their craft full time mm-hmm. and are scared and then don't do it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's remarkable that you just went straight for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the type of person where, and I thank the Lord that I've kind of changed my mindset to be more like this, because I used to be a lot more reserved and a lot more shy. I would never do this like a few years ago.
This being a radio interview.
Exactly. Yeah. I would never have even seen myself sitting in a room like this talking to you or to any strangers and stuff like that. But over time, I think, especially during the pandemic where I had more time to discover myself, I became a person where I was like, you know what? Nothing is promised and my life is my own and what I do with it is all my decision. And if I'm going to succeed in one area, it's going to be because of something that I made, that I chose to do. So if I just sit here and not take the plunge, obviously I'm not going to go anywhere. And in terms of the art, that was like the same situation. So I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let's try it.
Do you have any interest in going back to the biochemistry? Was that something you were interested in?
Yeah. I mean, I always liked what I was learning in school in biochemistry. And the goal from since I was a lot younger was pharmacy. Honestly, art, it will always be there. And I can always paint on the side. And if anything, I would like, I'm the type of person that I would enjoy stability, if anything. So I don't mind painting while going back to school. I'm actually thinking of going back to school, but I'm not dropping the painting. That's for sure. But if the painting stuff goes somewhere where I'm able to live through it and live off it, despite stuff like, I don't know, inflation that's happening right. like that, you know what I mean? Then screw it. I'm going to stick to that because I really, really love it. But I definitely love sciences and I definitely love biochemistry and I'm really interested in pharmacy. So that's not something that I'm willing to let go as well. So
that's wonderful because it's yeah. sometimes there's this real segmentation, like there's the art versus the sciences.
Yeah.
But it's all really part of the same human experience.
Absolutely.
It's not two completely different spheres.
Absolutely. If you think about it, the programs are called arts and sciences mm-hmm. for a reason, right? You kind of need some kind of artistic mind to dive into certain types of sciences. So I don't, a lot of people do see them as separate and if anything, like opposites, but I feel like you need one for the other and they could be, they're necessary for one to work together, if that makes sense.
Well, science is a very creative process.
Yeah.
People don't think about that a lot, but you learn the principles, the basic rules about how things work, but then to create new knowledge about a scientific discipline, you kind of have to take a leap. You have to extrapolate from the rules and have that kind of creative moment.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. You said it perfectly.
So, I mean, perhaps you'll find when if you ever go back to school to study pharmacy mm-hmm. that the painting has really served you.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that since getting into art and painting and stuff like that, I see things more artistically. I don't know if that
sure.
makes sense.
Tell us about that.
So I realized that even in like the mundane things, let's say I'm shopping, and I'm looking at, I don't know, clothing items, or not even that. Let's say something random. I'm at Canadian Tire and I'm looking at, like, I don't know, metal scraps and, I don't know, cans of oil or whatever. I would just think, I'm like, I wonder like what I could do with this if I could incorporate it in the stuff that I do. And I feel like my brain thinks like that with almost every single thing since I started painting, because I kind of just want to create stuff and make stuff out of like anything, whether that be like scrap or like your regular painting stuff. So I definitely 100% when I get back into school, I definitely will carry that into my studies for sure.
Sure. So you'd be also interested, because you mostly do paintings right now, as we've talked about, but you'd be interested in branching out into like 3D art where you incorporate these metal scraps.
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing, because I've painted on canvas for about 2 years now, and I kind of want to switch it up, and whether that be with like other stuff like wood, metal, or something more like tangible that's not 2D, I definitely want to get into that.
And self-teaching as well.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's a really, actually quite the empowering thing that nowadays there's so many free online resources, or not online in the library, but there's so many resources that are accessible, whereas in the past, like, art could be something that was more reserved for people who could afford it.
Exactly. Yeah. Not to shit on people that went to school for art. There is so much that I don't know because I didn't go to an art school or was in a program for art. But yeah, we have the accessibility of information nowadays is insane. So you can get by, especially with art, with stuff online, honestly, or even just doing stuff yourself and just figuring it out. So that's what I've been doing. I've just been going with it.
Whatever. So did you look up tutorials? Did you look up books? Did you just do it repeatedly?
Well, I always had some artists that I kind of looked up to. That sounds extreme. That I enjoyed their style. Through seeing that and mixing what I enjoyed of their style with who I believe I am as a person, that's kind of how I got to start painting what I am doing today. So it wasn't necessarily like, oh, so I went to art school and I learned XYZ. What I did learn online was mostly like the more technical stuff, like what paints can I mix? What paints work with what canvases? Is this worth it? Or like even stuff that you think that has nothing to do with art, such as like building a website, stuff like that.
Oh, online, yes, of course.
Extremely helpful. Extremely helpful. So yeah.
Well, that's a huge part of it. It's what allows you to keep creating the art.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to come back a little bit, you're talking about looking into artists who you were interested in and then trying to imitate them or then branch off from their work. So mm-hmm. Who were some of these influences?
In the beginning, there's a couple of them would be Art by Brie. All of them have an Instagram page. You can check them out. Art by Brie was a heavy influence, especially in the beginning because of her color, her bold choice of colors, and her more queer art, depiction of like queer art, and just like her energy. I was very attracted to her energy and her work. And so I kind of implemented that part of her into my work. And I think you can still see it in my work with the choice of colors, like being pop art and stuff like that.
Sure, yeah. So yeah. No, of course, if you go on Sadie's Instagram, which is, again, Satie, which is S-A-T-I-I-E.
Mm-hmm.
On that page, I mean, one of the first things you notice about your work is the bright colors. Yeah. So I wanted to ask about that. So what drew you to Art by Brie's bold colors? Like, what is it about color that really appeals to you?
I actually had to think about that for like a while when I was developing my style, if you will. I realized that it's really simple and I just love color. I paint stuff that I feel and that makes me happy. And in turn, in doing that, I'm just hoping that the people that buy it, the people that see it, enjoy it, and they feel like a similar sense of like joy and comfort and all that stuff through like colorful art. So I would say like yellow, like bright yellows and pinks and purples, like all those colors combined, they just bring me joy. And just like waking up in the morning to like brightness, vibrance, it does something to me. I don't explain it. So I was like, of course, this is the route that I'm going to take with my art.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like from what you've said so far, that you're someone who doesn't like to overthink, but when something feels right, you go for it.
Exactly. Yeah. I've scrapped so many paintings because I was like, you know what? I'm over it. But the ones that I kept are the ones that I like, essentially.
And there are plenty of them already.
Yeah. I'm trying to build them up more, but so far, so good.
So you said you create to make yourself happy.
Yes. That,
do you try to, well, okay. There are so many different potentials for art. You can explore more melancholy notes, or you can explore more joy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the joy part something you'd like to focus on?
Yes, for like in short, for the most part.
Yes.
But I'm not restricted to that. I don't restrict myself to that. I really paint what I want. That sounds so selfish. No, it does. It's not selfish. I paint what I want. I paint what I want to feel, and I paint to make myself happy, essentially. Everything that I do, for the most part, so, except for like paying taxes and stuff like that, is to make myself happy.
Well, for some people out there, let the station know if paying taxes makes you happy.
Nobody. Exactly. So I'm not going to paint about freaking paying. Anyway, side note. I just paint to make myself happy. Every single thing that I do, whether it's art related or not, my goal is just to be happy. I don't have to be rich. I don't have to live in a giant mansion. I just want to be happy, and simple things tend to make me happy, thankfully. And one of those simple things is painting bright, colorful stuff. So I was like, of course this makes sense. Obviously, what I paint doesn't just involve color. I don't know if you noticed, but
of course.
All of the, or most, if not all of the figures that I've drawn, that I've painted have been predominantly black figures. And if they're not black figures, then it's not a face. It's just like a body or something else. So obviously there's more to what I tend to paint than just like colorful faces just to make me happy. But I paint my experiences and what I want my future experiences to be. And that's like a happy thing. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, of course, because you cannot, as an artist, you cannot control what the reception to your work is going to be. You can't control that other people are going to buy it, if it's going to make them happy.
Absolutely.
But one thing you can focus on is you can check in with yourself and realize, is this making me happy? And at least you can reliably get that from your own work.
Exactly.
So that's so important.
Yes, 100%.
You've mentioned in your artist statement for the MTL Uncovered event taking place again this Sunday, May 29th, that the quote was, "I use bright colors to represent black culture in its vibrance, power, and diversity."
Yup.
So, no, of course, many black figures like Tupac Shakur.
Yeah.
Just the first one passed by.
There's Tupac, there's Biggie, there's Lauryn Hill.
Of course,
there's a bunch of predominant known figures, essentially.
And I find what's really interesting about focusing on black figures and black identity is the word color. Again, there's the phrase people of color. And so, like, the classic, like, signifier of being black is darker skin.
Yes.
And yet, with your art, a lot of the times, you don't take a totally realistic approach. Right now, I'm looking at your piece, Willow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a woman who has blue and purple and yellow skin.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really interesting twist on the word color. And I didn't know if you had something you wanted to say on that.
Yeah, that was intentional, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
What I say now is I add color to the faces of people of color.
Mm.
And that was very, very intentional. Not to get too deep into it, but obviously during the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, there's a whole second wave of massive BLM riots.
Right.
That's also a period that, hence, like, since no one was working and I graduated, it was a time where I was allowed to kind of stop and just sit with myself and really dive into who I am as a person in terms of all aspects of my life. So that includes my skin color, my gender, my queerness, and everything. I needed to incorporate that into my art. It's not even that I needed to. It was a natural progression.
Right, because it was on your mind. It
exactly.
It came out when you wanted to express yourself.
Exactly. So what I wanted to do with this and in adding color to the faces of people of color was to embrace us, our facial features, embrace our hair, and embrace our color because, as I said before, like, color makes me happy. I think, like, colorful things are beautiful to me. So I wanted to emphasize that and add that to the skin and just to show love to people of color, just like everyone else, like, we deserve it.
Of course,
you know?
Yeah.
And for so many decades, specifically black people, as you know, were shit on for so long. And so I think that
I think there are worse, much worse terms that would, wouldn't even do it justice.
Yeah. Yeah. To say the least. So I honestly just wanted to flip it on his head and contribute to that and just embrace the beauty that is blackness, embrace the beauty that is our hair texture and our talent, essentially. Willow is one of the pieces of mine that kind of blew up and one of my favorite pieces. I'm still sad that I sold it, but I'm so happy that I sold it in the same time. Anyway.
It's a good sign that you're sad to be parted from it.
It's hard to let them go sometimes. But yeah, it's one of my favorite pieces because I think it's one of the more beautiful pieces. But at the same time, it's one of the pieces that I think is the most important because Black people are still, but mainly back in the day, like pigeonholed to a certain set of how do you say this? Stereotypes? Put in a box. Stereotypes. Put in a box. So if you're Black, you have this accent. You like this type of music or you have this type of style. It's very like specific, that box that Black people were put in for years and years and years.
I mean, still put in.
Yeah, still put in. Yeah, definitely. And I think Willow being in rock and shaving her head and like being punk and all of these things that you wouldn't necessarily associate with being Black. She's like not that. You know what I mean? So her, especially with her last album coming out, I thought like she's such a beautiful person and beautiful individual and such a good representation of like how diverse we like Black people are.
Correct.
Despite what some people may think, essentially.
Because when people read just darker skin as, oh, Black, like there's this like monolithic identity. Mm-hmm. Here, what you're taking is you're taking color, you know, skin color, which is something that some people put so much emphasis on. And then you're saying it's not one thing. And Willow, which for listeners, you can find it on Sadie's Instagram page. The handle would be Satie, S-A-T-I-I-E. And then the piece Willow, you can find, it was a post from August 22nd, 2021. So you can look at that if you want to follow along. But this painting, Willow, again, it's Willow Smith with her face in three different colors. It's taking skin color, like darker skin, and really like
flipping it on its head, honestly.
For sure, because it's more than one color and it is like it's vibrant and it is beautiful.
Thank you. Don't gas me up. Listen. It represents for the most part with the Willow piece, like the diversity that is within every individual.
Right.
We're not a monolith. No individual is no group of people is a monolith. We're all different. We have different tastes and styles and all that stuff. So even like choosing three or four different colors, that's like
what is usually read as one skin color. Now you're taking it into three.
Exactly. Yes.
So how exactly do you go about picking the colors for your pieces?
I have, you know what? It's a boring answer, but I pick what I feel.
Okay.
Most of it, I realize that I kind of go with what I think the aura of the person may be, in my opinion, what it may be. For example, if you look at the Lauren piece, it's like yellowy, orangey hues. And I feel like the like yellows mixed with orange, mixed with like black and stuff like that kind of represents her, in my opinion, the like calmish but vibrant vibes. When it comes to Willow, because she is so different to a lot of the other artists, a lot of the other Black artists that we are used to nowadays, I was like, I need to add like multiple colors. I need this to be vibrant. I need it to stand out. So I kind of just go with what I feel when I see the artist or when I hear their music or when I listen to, you know, them talk saying, yeah.
Lauren, by the way, refers to Lauren Hill.
Yes.
And that painting you can also find on Sadie's Instagram page. This was from a post from May 26th, 2021, if you'd like to check that out.
I also have a website, and it's artbysatie.com. So S-A-T-I-I-E, but it's artbysatie.com, which has pretty much all of my paintings that you see on my Instagram page. Almost all.
Because you post on Instagram fairly regularly, and you try to keep it casual there. You have reels that are they're basically TikToks.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, yeah. They're funny, they're snarky. What kind of role does social media play in your overall artistic practice, and what are some of the things you are trying to achieve?
With social media, it's kind of a tough thing because I'm typically, maybe not nowadays, but a more like reserved kind of person. I like to live in a moment and not take pictures and videos of every single thing. But with having to sell your art, nowadays you kind of have to put yourself out there, which is a good and a bad thing for different reasons. But when it comes to my social media, I came to a spot where it's like, I'm not going to work myself to death. I'm going to make this fun because I don't take myself too seriously. Mm-hmm. I don't take anything too seriously unless we're talking about taxes, you know.
Again, listeners, we are talking about taxes.
Just kidding. I don't take myself too seriously, so I don't want to show someone that I'm not. So I set a camera down and I kind of talk into the camera until something sticks, until I have something that I think would be funny and representative of me, and incorporate my art in that, and that's how I move forward. I try not to overthink it. Sometimes it's hard to not overthink it, but screw it.
It is easy to overthink it with all the likes and the numbers that you can reference.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
Did this post do better than the last one?
Yeah. It's a time thing. Obviously, in the beginning, it's like, oh, this many people liked it, but they liked the other one more. So you kind of compare your work and you like second guess your own self. But after a while, it's like, it doesn't matter.
No, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Especially because a lot of the people following your Instagram now, because your Instagram is public and you're selling your art, they don't know you.
Exactly. So I can just, exactly. If the people following are going to judge me positively or negatively, I can't change that. I can only be myself. And being myself is what makes me the most happy. So if the people that like it will stick, the people that don't will go on to the next thing. And it is what it is. That's the cycle of life. I do the same thing. So I came to a place where I was like, I'm just going to do, once again, stuff that makes me happy. And that does not exclude my social media pages.
Well, I find that so interesting that you said that you didn't want to show something, someone that you're not. By nature of posting these things to people who don't know the complete you, you are showing a certain aspect. You are projecting an image, an incomplete image.
Yeah.
Of who you are.
Yeah.
So it's kind of impossible to show someone.
It is impossible
to show exactly who you are, but only show some of it.
Yeah, but even in like personal, like face, like coworkers, they're not gonna know all of the details of my past life. You know what I mean? You can only do so much, especially when it comes to social media, and people are gonna take in what they see and filter it in their own minds how they want. So I just do what I feel is authentic to me. That I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with what people see, and if people want to see more, then we can DM and talk to each other. But other than that, it's social media, you know. It's a front for everyone, whether we like it or not, to a certain extent. I'm just trying to decrease that level of like front that I'm putting up on online, you know. But that's the name of the game.
Yeah, and it is, fortunately or unfortunately, a necessary reality for a lot of artists working today.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One thing that I will not do, at least not now, is force myself to do a TikTok dance for my art. I'm not doing that. I'm sorry. You know, so yeah, it's a necessity for a lot of artists. And a lot of artists, I realized, at least the ones that I've spoken to, are not comfortable in front of the camera or even like going to markets and like talking to people face to face. A lot of the artists that I've spoken to, they're pretty reserved and they just like making art and just putting out there and then closing the computer. So that would be a lot tougher for those types. Thankfully, I don't have that much of a struggle. But in today's world, that's unfortunately what a lot of people have to do to kind of get forward. So good luck, honestly. And it sucks, but good luck to all of us.
To honestly, all of us.
To all of us.
Listeners, that includes you.
Yep. Dang, that was so like ominous. Jeez.
We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back very soon. Hello, listeners. So now we are back with Sidi Bien-Aimé.
Hello,
also
hello.
Known as
Sati.
Yes.
Art by Sati, or just Sati.
Right. So you can see her art. She's a self-taught visual artist born and raised in Montreal. And you can find her art on Instagram or on her website. On Instagram, her handle is Satie, so that's S-A-T-I-I-E. So something I wanted to talk to you that we didn't cover before the break is you identify as a Black female queer artist.
Yes.
Well, we talked about this a little bit, what it means to be a Black artist, but also what does it mean to be a queer woman and also working in Montreal? How do all those things come together?
Personally, I don't really like to add like labels to myself.
Sure.
Because it's like restricting a little bit, mm-hmm. but it's a way to communicate like some parts of myself to other people, right? So that's why I would identify myself as, you know, as Black, as queer, as a woman, etc. And I'm born in Montreal. But what that means to me is a lot of things. What I mean to express when I say those things is that there are parts of me that other people can relate to. So people that are in the LGBTQ plus community, they would get the queer aspect. So what I'm interested in, who I tend to hang out with potentially and all that stuff, what I'm attracted to, not what, that sounds, who I'm attracted to. So it's, even explaining this is difficult because it's like pigeonholed-y. Really, I put the labels there just for other people mainly, not necessarily for myself. Those are just like a very small percentage of who I am as a person and what I create.
Right, yeah, because we were talking earlier about how a lot of people will see Black people as a monolith, whereas really, like, there's so many, like, amazing, talented, beautiful people who all happen to be Black. That's only one aspect of their identity. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing that you try to push back against in your art.
Exactly, yeah.
How is it for you living in Montreal and trying to be an artist? Because that does have a tangible effect on what possibilities are open to you, what you are inspired by.
Absolutely. I think being in Montreal, especially when you're kind of in the art scene, is such a privilege, I guess, to say the least, or for lack of a better term, because people here, especially if you travel and all that stuff, if you compare it to other bigger cities, for example, or rural
yes.
Thank you. There's so much culture here. There's so much art. There's so much talent. And the personalities in Montreal are so like comforting.
Comforting.
Comforting for me. I feel like people here tend to be really, really kind and really laid back, whereas you won't necessarily see that in some other like bigger cities.
Are you referring to Toronto?
Yes. I'm just Toronto. No, I'm just kidding. Toronto or even New York. New York, there's some beautiful spots. But if you go in the more like mainstream areas, it feels like kind of like alienated. I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't feel like homey. Montreal is home to me in terms of the people that I've met, especially in the art space, and how like diverse everyone is when you dig, honestly. Montreal is a beautiful city to be into art.
So do you plan on staying here for the foreseeable future?
Honestly, I wouldn't, I'm not going to lock myself down to Montreal, but I honestly would not be upset if I lived here my entire life. It's home, you know, it's home to what I'm familiar to, and it's comforting for me. And I just like how everyone is, the style and how, especially when I got into art and the art scene, and even when I kind of dove into my queerness a little bit more in 2020. That's when I was kind of like looking into myself and trying to figure out who I am as a person.
Right.
Through doing that, I found groups of people that I did not know existed for so long because I kind of went into the more underground spaces of Montreal. So if you want to talk about like the queer spots of Montreal, predominantly Black queer spaces, if you look at the surface of Montreal, non-existent. But if you know the right people, you talk to the right people, there is a whole like underground world of like beautiful people.
Name an example of a space that you've leaned on.
I would say the biggest one that had a bigger impact to me, there's a page for it actually on Instagram. They're called Sweet Like Honey.
Sweet Like Honey.
Yes. And they make parties and events like bingo nights, for example, or like even like strip club nights. But it's focused on women and femme presenting individuals. And it's focused on BIPOC individuals as well. And if you come to Montreal for like and you're here for a week, for example, you will never know that existed. I was here for most of my life and I didn't know that was spaces like that existed till recently. So Montreal is just everything to me. It's beautiful.
It has so many possibilities, but I guess that also comes back to what we were talking about earlier, with labels. Like, yes, they are restrictive, but they allow people to find each other.
Yes, and exactly. You're so smart.
Thank you. But I guess that's having those labels, like looking for people who could relate to certain elements of your experience.
Yes.
And looking at words like Black or femme-presenting.
Yeah. In that sense, they're necessary to kind of find mm-hmm. your own tribe, if you will. But in other senses, they can be restricting. So it's always a plus and a minus with like labeling and stuff like that. But specifically for that, it was necessary for me to be like, hey, this is who I am and this is what I represent. And I'm a person of color and I date women and all that stuff like that. And the people in those spaces understand and can empathize with those things. So right. when you're all kind of put together, it can be beautiful. So Sweet Like Honey is a great introduction to for people that are similar to me in those small right. aspects, you know?
Because this coincided. There was a period during the pandemic. So again, like you graduate from Concordia in biochemistry around May 2020. You have a lot of time on your hands because lockdown and all that.
Too much time. Too much time.
This period of really reflecting on your identity and your different facets of your identity coincides with you starting to make art more consistently and more seriously.
Yeah.
And so those reflections on what it means to be Black will seem to feed into your art.
Yeah, they kind of molded it into each other. And I kind of just took it in and filtered it through my own experiences and my mindset, and out came what I create now, essentially. So yeah, definitely.
So being in spaces like Sweet Like Honey.
Yeah, that influenced not only my art, but like my how I think
and yeah.
about like people and about what I see and all that stuff. It's definitely a beautiful, positive experience.
Do you want to explain like a little bit more like how it changed your way of thinking?
In a sense, it's more of a thing of where I didn't realize how much I needed spaces like that. I feel like it didn't necessarily change my thinking, but it kind of unlocked a part of my mindset that I didn't know that I had and needed. So there was like kind of a void when it comes to not having queer Black femme spaces, not only in Montreal, but like across the world are like pretty much non-existent. So it's not necessarily that it changed my way of thinking. It just allowed me to realize that, hey, these spaces exist. And I can feel so much more comfortable in those spaces, and I can explore myself within those spaces. So through meeting other people that are similar to me in those aspects, I just feel like I grew as a person. In what ways, I have yet to kind of really dive into that and think about it, but it's just a feeling, really.
Well, art is a wonderful way to express some of the things that you can't necessarily put into words.
Yeah.
You can capture more of a feeling.
Absolutely. And it's funny you say that, because for the longest time, like, I've always admired people that are, like, very well-spoken, because I, for the longest time, had difficulties expressing myself verbally or even, well, writing is a little bit easier for me, but verbally has always been a little bit more difficult for me.
And now we're on the radio.
And now we're on the radio. There you go. See, listen, I'm diving into things and I'm just hoping it sticks. Yeah, so diving to visual arts or even, like, dancing with people in an area that is like queer Black femme spaces, like stuff like that, it's a feeling that I can't express, that like kind of made me grow as a person. I can't for some reason express it into words, but I just feel comfortable, and I feel like a void has been filled, a part of myself has been like filled, if that makes sense.
It sounds like you were embracing like these parts like wholeheartedly and finding a lot of joy in that.
Yeah.
And and again, like the joy translates perhaps to all the colors you use. But
exactly.
These are just some possibilities for how.
Yes, exactly. Listen, I need you to like express these things verbally for me, because I'm struggling. No, I'm just kidding. It's good.
We should start a psychoanalysis radio show.
Oh my God. I'm down. You need a co-host? No, I'm just kidding.
But also, what would you say are some of perhaps the drawbacks of being an artist in Montreal? Is it the relative lack of spaces like Sweet Like Honey for Black femme-presenting individuals? Like the general, because they do exist, those spaces, but there aren't a lot of them. Is that a drawback? I guess also the question is about artists specifically.
Yeah. When it comes to art in Montreal specifically, obviously there are going to be certain drawbacks, especially being like painting what I tend to paint, like people color. It's very specific. It's portraits of people that are pretty much famous or known, and they're people of color.
Well, it is a smaller art market than, say, Toronto.
Yeah. This is the way I see it, because the drawbacks are also a plus to me.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, one of the drawbacks, as you mentioned, would be visibility and like accessibility, I guess.
Sure.
For lack of a better term. So it's not mainstream necessarily to paint what I tend to paint, or being a smaller artist in Montreal, period.
It's not the most marketable thing you could be doing.
Exactly, exactly. But at the same time, I feel like in those spaces, you find people that are very much into what you're doing, and they're dedicated as hell, and they love and support your work. So it's like, if you're in a smaller market when it comes to art, there's always going to be those like very like loyal sounds weird, but like the people that understand what you're making and identify with it and will help push you in by sharing and by talking to people, and they're there for the cause, you know what I mean?
Right.
They're there for that particular art. They love that stuff. But then again, it's like, if people don't really know about it, how can you really grow that much? So it's like a plus and a minus with being in a smaller space when it comes to art.
It sounds like you're saying that it's easier because it's not so... Because there are objectively more voices in a bigger market.
Yes.
And so you're saying it's easier to not get drowned out and to find pockets of people,
yes,
who understand you.
Exactly.
In a place like Montreal.
Yes. And with art, you want to find your... I've realized that you want to find your niche. Otherwise, you're not going to stand out. My niche just tends to be in a smaller kind of area, which I think is okay, because I stand out in my own little way. But hopefully those spaces that are not necessarily like seen in the art world will grow with,
right,
time. And I don't know if I want them to become mainstream or not, but it's probably for the best if they do become mainstream. But there's always good things and bad things with stuff becoming huge, you know?
Yeah, you lose perhaps the human element.
Yes.
You know, like, you put a lot of care into your pieces and you hope that other people will appreciate that.
Yeah. When it's like a big space that's already, you know, there's so many different voices and opinions that may come through and tell you, oh, you know, maybe you should do X, Y, or Z. Whereas if you're in a smaller space and you have people that follow you, that understand you, they're kind of just like, yeah, do your own thing. And there's no pressure. Whereas I feel like there would be a little bit more pressure if you're in a more mainstream space. I don't know if I'm even making,
sure,
sense right now.
I did talk to Arthur Kalamides, who is the organizer of MTL Uncovered, where Sadie's work is being displayed very soon. He said that maybe Montreal artists are more willing to take risks and to do things that are less marketable, because also the cost of living here is lower.
Yeah, yeah, that's well said, honestly. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I do feel like people here are more innovative because of that, because we're in a smaller market, I guess.
I think one of the other things that's striking about Montreal is the French and English divide, which, again, at the time of recording, Bill 96 just passed this week.
Yay. Gosh. Oh, yeah.
So there is sometimes a bit of a divide in like cultural spheres between Francophones and Anglophones.
Definitely. I'm more into like Anglo spaces, even though I speak French, like, mm-hmm, relatively fluently. There's a I don't want to say cultural difference, but it is really like a bit of a cultural difference.
Sure.
With that divide. So yeah, you definitely notice the difference. And even like with the art that we create between like more English speaking areas and more French speaking areas, in my opinion anyway.
That's another thing to think about. Does that make it harder to find a community when you say are writing, you're doing your marketing in English, but there are people you're missing who speak French?
Yeah. I mean, thankfully I speak both languages. So if anything, the people that do speak French, we can communicate and stuff like that. But I try not to let that be an issue for me. But I can see how it's a big problem for people that don't speak French. And there are quite a few people in Montreal that are like transplants, if you will, and don't speak French or into art world. And they can't get into certain, a little bit more mainstream spaces because, you know, Quebec is a French province.
Mm-hmm.
And so the spots that are like, hey, you want to be here, like the galleries and stuff like that, they're mainly French.
Well, this is another conversation entirely, but what funding can you access?
Yes.
Because of the languages you speak.
Yeah, that's an even bigger issue, definitely. Yeah.
Moving a little bit off of that topic, you're an independent artist. This MTL Uncovered event that I'm doing a series of interviews on is all about independent Montreal-based artists.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean to you to be independent? And also, you're not only an artist, but a businesswoman.
Yeah, I wouldn't even... Again, with the labeling and all that stuff.
So many labels.
So many labels. You know what? I'm going to say independent to me means that I paint what I want, when I want. If I like it, I'm going to put it out. If I don't like it, maybe I'll pull it out and say, hey, I hate this. Or no one will see the light of day. So when it comes to saying like independent, it's more, I choose to do what I want and on my own schedule and stuff like that.
That's a wonderful thing.
It's so freeing. When it comes to the businesswoman aspect, would I call myself a businesswoman? I guess I kind of have to.
You have a business. You sell
Yeah,
things.
I do. Yeah. Because the thing that they don't tell you, and I realize that the hard way.
Okay.
The thing that they don't tell you when you start a business out of something, like out of a passion project, is that over time, first you're going to do maybe like 90%. In my case, so 90% of it was painting, and then the 10% of it was like marketing and, you know, building my little website and like, oh yeah, this is fun, this is cool. And then over time it shifted and it's like 70, 80% marketing, doing your website, doing research,
emails.
On like emails, like most of it is not painting, and I'm left with little time to paint and like take a breath of fresh air and clear my mind and do that. In a sense, I had to be a businesswoman if I wanted to sell my art. And if you want to sell anything, really, I wouldn't label myself a businesswoman because I just want to paint, really.
Right.
But I have no choice if I want to grow as a person or grow as an artist, rather, in today's world. So, yeah, I would say artist by choice, businesswoman by force, if you will. But whatever. It's fun to learn all these things regardless. I've learned a lot, a whole lot. In the past 2 years that I started painting.
And I imagine you still get more time to do art than you would if you, say, had a 9-to-5 that paid the bills.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
then
yeah,
you did your art. So yeah. Even though it's like what you said, 70 to 80% is marketing and admin. So 20 to 30% is art.
Yeah. And I say that like it's a bad thing, but I'm not gonna lie. Like, I kind of like it. I learned to like it. I really enjoy like working for myself. You know what I mean? I'm writing emails and I'm changing up my website and I'm doing all these things for myself. So it doesn't feel like a 9-to-5 necessarily. It doesn't feel like I'm forced really to do those things. Just it's all part of the game and it's to grow myself. So I enjoy it regardless. Sometimes it's tedious, but
yeah, I guess the struggle there though is when you work for yourself, there are no set hours, and so you can go way over.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Or way on if I just stop. Or if artists, especially nowadays, just stop and say, oh, you know, I don't feel like working today, that's going to affect your income. It's really good to work for yourself, and it's great if you're very passionate about what you're doing. But if you lose steam in that, it just becomes, like, I would say, like, more demanding than, like, a 9-to-5 where you could just go home.
No, I'm
and
sure.
Sleep, you
it's
know?
A steady paycheck.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so you just have to keep going. And I'm still enjoying it. So that's why I'm still here. I'm loving it. So
right,
I'm
going to
keep that business aspect of it.
So what are your goals for your art in the short and long term?
I'm basically doing just like painting on canvases right now. So in the short term, I kind of want to dive into other things. So I want to do wood art.
We talked about this.
I want to do wood art. I want to do like more tangible art, so like maybe incorporate like different types of materials within my art and maybe put on canvas, or maybe not putting on canvas, maybe paint on something completely different. So I kind of want to like move from like the regular canvas art that I've been doing and kind of dive into that and see how that goes. So I'm really excited about that. I have a new collection that's coming out. Well, one of the pieces have already come out. It's called Bantu. And if you look at Bantu, it's not colorful. It's actually the opposite of the other stuff that people are used to me posting. So it's like gray faces and just like nude colored background. So it's very simple and very like not tame, but like not, it's not as colorful as my other pieces. So I've kind of dove into the opposite of what I've been doing lately. So that's been really exciting as well.
Just experimenting and not, again, not pigeonholing yourself, as we've been talking about this entire time.
Exactly. The day that I'm pigeonholing myself into something is I know that it feels like a chore. So I just need to keep switching it up. And so far, I've been having a blast with that.
Wonderful. And then teaching yourself things along the way. Because, again, Sadie is a self-taught artist.
Yes, ma'am.
About Banty, you can find part one.
Mm-hmm.
The series is called Hair Up High.
Exactly. So it's a four-piece series. The first one is called Bantu, and then I have three other ones that are coming out. And they're all going to be faces of women, depicted as women of color, but they're all gray. All of the faces is gray. The backgrounds are nude colors. And what I want to do with that collection is focus on hair, hence the name Hair Up High. So it's just to celebrate different hairstyles that are staples within the Black femme community. So Bantu knots is one of them, and then there's going to be four other hairstyles. So if you look at three other, yes, you're right. So if you look at Bantu, the emphasis and the detail in the hair is, like, in my eyes, phenomenal. So I'm just like aiming to like just show love to Black hair, because I didn't always love my hair. I've learned to love it, and I want to express that. That's what I'm doing.
No, and I mean, you can find Bantu, which is part one of the series Hair Up High, on Sadie's Instagram, on a post from May 3rd. And yes, the hair looks like it took a very long time to capture.
Yeah, yeah. I'm proud of it. I'm really happy with it so far. The next ones are going to be phenomenal. I already started painting them. I'm happy.
I'm excited for it too. So that's more of your short-term goal or long-term?
Short-term, yeah.
And then long-term?
Long-term, with regards to art, I definitely see myself going back to school, but I'm going to keep painting for sure. Long-term, with art, I try not to think too far in the future with things like this, because I don't know where I'm going to be in like 5-10 years. I always like hated questions like that. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? What do you see yourself in 10 years? 5 years ago, I did not see myself where I am here today. No one knew there was going to be a pandemic. You know what I mean?
Or that you were going to start selling art.
Exactly. So I try not to overthink about things like that. There's just certain things, like, I know I want to go back to school, I don't want to keep painting, but I just know that I want to grow with my art, and whatever form that takes, I'm okay with. So we'll see. I'll let you know in 5 years.
Sure. Maybe in 5 years you'll be incorporating your pharmaceutical studies into your
maybe
art.
That'd be interesting, but maybe
you could be, I don't know,
painting pharmacists? I don't know. I have no
painting
idea.
Painting pharmacists, or I was thinking more like painting like chemicals.
Painting chemicals.
Like chemical structures.
Oh my, okay. All right, maybe. It'd be completely different. We'll see.
Different chemical compounds have different shapes.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, yeah, that's something that I could definitely incorporate. And you know what? By the time I get back into school and I'm still painting, I will definitely see like a cross between those two for sure. There's going to be some of that in my art. I can almost guarantee.
Looking forward to that. I just planted this seed in your
there
mind.
You go. Thank you, Alice.
So this was Sadie Bien-Aimé, also who goes by the artist name Satsi. So you can find her work on her Instagram, which is Satsi, S-A-T-I-I-E. You can also visit her website, which is Art by Satsi, which is art by SATIIE.com. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn more about her, check out her work. Any last words from you?
You're dope as hell. That's it.
All
to
right.
More art.
You heard it from here. You heard it here first. And all right, to our listeners, take care, and you'll hear us on the airwaves soon.
Bye bye. We'll be right back.
too.